Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5287, James L. Shirley, Doctor et al. Versus Kathleen Sebelius, in her official capacity as Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services et al. Appellants. Ms. Brinkman for appellants, Mr. Hungar for appellees.
May it please the court. Beth Brinkman appearing on behalf of the government. The district court reading of the Dickey-Wicker Amendment is fundamentally flawed and should be reversed. The research at issue here uses human embryonic stem cells, not embryos. It is not research in which an embryo is destroyed or subject to risk. The district court erred in reading the statute to unambiguously prohibit the federal funding of this research.
You agree that there can be no federal funding for derivation, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
In all instances, can you imagine any instance in which there would be federally funded derivation?
No, I can't, Your Honor. I think that is research in which an embryo is destroyed or subject to risk.
So then the only question for us is whether the later research is somehow inextricably intertwined with the derivation. Is that right?
I would go even further, Your Honor, and say it's whether or not it's the research to which the statute refers. The research is talking about the research that is in the grant application that is going to be federally funded. And the district court's interpretation would somehow take a derivation process that created some precursor material that then divided and later was used in hundreds of research projects and somehow make that early action.
But you don't argue that that's not research in the first instance?
No, Your Honor.
It's a different type of research removed in time and purpose?
It's different research, right? There are many reasons.
What's the purpose of the research that animates the derivation?
It depends on the project, Your Honor.
It's all for later research on stem cell lines, right?
Some of the research is actually to be more efficient about deriving stem cells. Some is to research how you identify stem cells. Some of the research that is prohibited and was actually original purpose of this amendment has nothing to do with stem cells. It was research on embryos for pre-implantation, research for in vitro fertilization. That's what occurred in 1990, had been proposed in 1996 to be federally funded, and that's what caused Dickey-Wicker to be amendment. And we have always agreed
that we could imagine if there was an instance in which the you could establish that the purpose of the derivation was to provide stem cell material for later research. Is that a close enough link that the derivation and the later research should be both band together?
Well, looking at the text of the statute, we think not. Certainly, it is not an ambiguously compelled reading. And here we have a longstanding reading interpretation by the agency that would be entitled to deference. It is the injunction here in the reading would overturn the status quo of 10 years and invalidate President Bush's policy dating back to 2001. So, certainly, it is a permissible reading.
The policy is revoked. I mean, that's not before us. It's gone. So
that's correct,
Your Honor. Whatever we do doesn't revive anything. I want to ask you about, let's say you're right about you can split the hair split what research means. See the definition of research in 46.102, research development. I mean, what does research development mean to you?
Well, Your Honor, we would suggest that when you look at the definitions of research in the regulations, there's a variety of definitions. And
but this is the one that the alternative ground on the greater risk of death or harm, whatever, relates to. The one at 46.102, and research means a systematic investigation including research development. Why is the derivation not research development?
Two things I would say. First, Your Honor, that definition is not incorporated into this statute. That regulation and statute are referenced as a benchmark for a level of harm that an embryo can be put at risk.
Right.
Though that regulation, the statute, both have to do with research on fetuses.
Right.
If you look at the regulation and statute, the neighboring provisions actually regulate research of fetal material. And so it reaffirms our reading of the statute that it deals with research on embryos, not research on stem cells. So we would say that's not incorporated. And I would also point out, for example, in our brief on page 30, we cite another regulation, 42 CFR 52.2, that is more relevant. That talks about the definition of research in this context, in the context of a grant application. It talks about an extramural grant, and that's the vast majority of grants that NIH funds. It defines research as a systematic investigation, study, or experiment designed to contribute to general knowledge broadly to relating broadly to public health. So here, when we're looking at the text,
does your definition of research allow for any instances in which derivation would take place and not be research? Can you imagine a situation where there's derivation that isn't for a research purpose or isn't part of research? Say someone derives the stem cells, puts in a freezer for 30 years. Is that research?
Oh, Your Honor, the derivation is research.
Always research.
Yes, because stem cells are not pre-labeled cells that you can simply extract. The process, the scientific process itself involves experimentation. There has to be material extracted and put into mediums where it can grow. And then after a couple days, there has to be an examination to determine whether any of those could be possible stem cells. And then after that, those possible cells then are treated with certain material.
Well, if that's the case, it seems to me that again, going back to the point I made trying to make before, is that your argument rises or falls on whether we think the later research on the line is somehow inextricably intertwined with the derivation.
Well, we would say no, Your Honor, because if there's any ambiguity, the district court rationale that this statute unambiguously compels such an interpretation can't be supported by the text or the history that I explained, that it was actually enacted in response to research on embryos and pre-implantation. We have a long-standing agency interpretation to which deference is due.
By the way, there's some dispute about what you just said, isn't there? Don't we have an affidavit suggesting that there actually was some embryonic stem cell research that had at least was in the nascent stages and that Congress was reacting to that as well?
And, Your Honor, NIH did not intend to fund that research. There's a hearing transcript that we cite that I urge you to read. In fact, that funding was revoked immediately upon an understanding of what that funding was being used for. There's been no dispute into what the proper interpretation of it is. But moreover, Your Honor, we still here have congressional ratification and clear legislative history. In the most
congressional
recent
ratification only, it doesn't help you if the reading of the statute that NIH is offering is wrong, right? I mean, there's case law that suggests that. So that doesn't really get you too far.
No, Your Honor, but if we're talking about a reasonable interpretation of this statute,
statute is ambiguous, right?
Yes, and we think the common sense reading, talking about what research is being funded, refers to the research for which the research is being funded. The NIH person who is deciding whether or not this application can be funded has to look at this research and determine whether what is proposed to be funded meets with its requirements. It couldn't be that common sense would have that reviewer delve into all of the materials and research tools that were going to be used at some different level in all of the experiments to see if some earlier, years ago, perhaps removed very remotely, somehow involved embryos. And in fact, a derivation that starts a stem cell line creates cells that then divide and divide. They're not the same cells probably later, and it can go to dozens, if not hundreds, of experiments. I would also point out, though, Your Honor,
by different parties.
Absolutely, Your Honor, for different research, completely different types of research. And I would also point out, though, on the ratification of the legislative history, here we have language that has been reenacted by Congress every year with full knowledge of the President Bush's policy and the guidelines. After these guidelines were promulgated in July of 2009, we have the House report, the Senate report, and the conference report. Expressly, the Senate report expressly referencing these guidelines, the conference report referring back to the other reports, and in exacting the same language and being very specific, and I have this on page 26, I believe, of our brief.
Well, if this judge were to credit legislative history, isn't there some legislative history on the other side as well? Don't we have a statement from the original sponsor that's not what's supposed to be happening here? I mean, it washes out, even if it's a legitimate form of inquiry.
Certainly, Your Honor, if we are talking about anything short of an unambiguous reading that compels the district court's reading. I see that
Is it your position that the NIH is entitled to deference? I mean, this is not a statute that it administers. It's directed to the Department of Education and a couple of other departments, labor.
It's the appropriations for NIH, and so they are charged.
But it's an appropriations that doesn't just affect HHS.
No, but it's a rider. The Dickey Wicker is an amendment to that
right.
That specifically directs the funding, a limitation on funding of NIH, and they are charged and have been charged since its enactment in 1996 with interpreting that and applying it to the use of their appropriations. So we do believe that they are entitled to deference.
And who charged them? Where were they charged with this?
Congress. Congress grants NIH the authority to...
other than in the Dickey Wicker Amendment.
The general appropriations and congressional, I think, inherent statutes for NIH, the very goal of NIH is to prevent, give funding to grant applications and also its own internal research. As we point out, this also prohibits the intramural research that NIH does.
Are federal dollars today going to those who are destroying embryos by deriving them? By driving stem cells?
No, Your Honor.
I thought at our last go-around that you said they were, and in the red brief at 23 suggests that that's going on today.
No, Your Honor. There's no federal funding of derivations. There never has been, unless it was a mistake, Your Honor. I'm not sure to what you're referring to. Oh, you're talking, I'm sorry, Your Honor. This is a fee that is paid to obtain materials. That was the same under President Bush's policy. There is a transfer fee that is paid for all material I don't know if all material. Some I think there may not be a transfer fee from, but that is simply a fee for materials.
So that's where the researcher is buying the stem cell line from whoever derived
from a university, whoever has it. For example, the university.
Why isn't that forbidden by the language of the statute?
Because it is not the federal money.
Money going to someone who has derived the stem cell, destroyed the embryo, those are federal dollars passing through, right?
Your Honor, that suggests that this kind of incentive argument, I believe, that plaintiffs
I'm not talking about the incentive. I'm just talking about that actual transaction when someone is paid for the stem cell line, and the person who's paid is someone who is derived the stem cell line from an embryo and destroyed it. Why isn't that?
Because you're buying stem cells that have resulted from division of cells that have occurred in some other activity, some other research that was funded by some other entity. And that has been the interpretation. That is fundamental to President Bush's policy in 2001.
I understand.
But, Your Honor, it's important. I mean, but I don't think we can be so easily dismissed. This is the background against which Congress acted in this very controversial area. This is the potential for life-saving scientific development. Congress knows what it's doing in this area, and it's a policy judgment that Congress has made with very direct language that NIH has interpreted consistently for more than a decade.
So again, why isn't when the recipient of the NIH grant pays $1,000 to the lab that has derived the stem cells from an embryo, why isn't that paying for the destruction?
That is not funding research. That research has already occurred. That stem cell line may already have been used for hundreds of experiments. For example, the H9 line, which was one of the lines that we used under President Bush's policy, is a very popular line because of its predictability. I believe it's mainly used to then differentiate into nerve cells. That is long ago paid for and funded. This is simply obtaining cells that have ultimately divided so that that scientist can go and use those cells. It's not research in which an embryo is destroyed or subject to risk. That's not
the research has already taken place, you're saying, in that instance.
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to save what time I have for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, you were out of time, but we will give you time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court, Thomas Hungar for Appellees. It is undisputed in this case that human embryonic stem cell research always entails the destruction of human embryos. The government admits this, conceding in its brief in the prior appeal that, quote, all embryonic stem cell research involves the destruction of embryos.
So would you agree with Ms. Brinkman's characterization that under your argument, the Bush administration policy was illegal as well?
Well, obviously, we haven't taken a position on that and haven't attacked the Bush policy because...
Well, but we're trying to explore the parameters of your argument, and the Bush administration policy would fail under your argument as well because it involved the destruction of embryos that happened preceding in time to the actual researchers being funded.
We have two statutory arguments, Your Honor, under the two different prongs of Dickey Wicker. Under the second prong, the creation of more than minimal risk because of the incentive provided by the funding, that obviously was not implicated by the Bush policy, and in fact that was the rationale of HHS in saying that the Bush policy was permissible. My personal opinion under the first prong of our argument is that the Bush policy also would be illegal, but of course that question is not before the Court. And given the government's admission that human...
Well, it is significant, isn't it, for Ms. Brinkman's argument that if we're trying to understand what Congress was doing here, the backdrop against which Congress is legislating is two now policies, both of two administrations, both of which have taken the view that the focus ought to be on the research that's being directly funded and not necessarily on how they got the stem cells, right?
I don't think so for a couple of different reasons. First of all, I don't think that the Bush administration did not say the focus has to be on this research and not on what was done before, on the first part of the research, the derivation. What they said is, we're not incentivizing the destruction because it's a purely retrospective one-time decision, and therefore there's no incentive for future.
But what I'm getting at is under your argument about research that has a temporal quality that's quite extended, right? I mean, you don't bound it by time. If a stem cell is derived today and research is done in it 20 years from now, under your argument, that research 20 years from now can't be funded because it's research in which an embryo was destroyed, right?
Whereas, as under the guidelines is required, the derivation, the donation, destruction, and derivation is all for the purpose of research. Yes,
right.
That makes it inextricably intertwined with the research, the continuing research that is done on those stem cells.
Regardless of the passage of time.
I'm sorry?
Regardless of the passage of time.
Yes, Your Honor.
The distinction between the entities during the derivation and the one doing the research or the later research. And what about Ms. Brinkman's point that the one derivation may, after several iterations of cell division, be an input into research by a large number of different unrelated researchers?
It's still research on the same line that was derived by destruction of the embryo. And the point about it being derived by different entities is actually covered by HHS's own human subject guidance, which says that even if with respect to other human subject research, they say even if the actual human subject part of the research is being done by a different institution, this is cited in our brief, the guidance provided by HHS is in our brief. I believe it's a page 22. But in any event, I'm sorry, page 20 of the red brief, the Human Subject Research Guidelines, and they say that an institution is engaged in human subject research even where all activities involving human subjects are carried out by employees or agents of another institution. So the fact that it's different institutions doing the deriving is page 20, Your Honor, is neither here nor there under their own interpretation, and we think that's clearly correct because otherwise it would be easy to evade the restrictions. Going back to the congressional ratification point for a moment, if I may, the fact is the government's congressional ratification is a doctrine to be used only sparingly and when it's clearly appropriate, and it requires a longstanding and consistent administrative interpretation. Here we have anything but a longstanding and consistent interpretation.
But for a decade, you've had an interpretation by two administrations now that conducting research on a stem cell line, the federal funder can go to the conducting of research on a stem cell line, right? That's been a consistent interpretation of both administrations.
Contrary to what you've just been pressing, right? That's all, because it all involves earlier destruction, it's all prohibited.
With respect to, I need to distinguish between our two statutory arguments. With respect to the first prong, that's correct, that the Bush policy would be inconsistent with that. With respect to the second prong, the Bush policy would not be inconsistent with our position, only the 2009 guidelines. So we have a year and a half of guidelines that are inconsistent with that statutory provision. Clearly, under any possible interpretation of longstanding inconsistent, that doesn't satisfy it. But moreover, with respect to the first prong, in 1996, NIH construed the statute exactly contrary in the letter to the Georgetown researcher, where they said what was going on there was pre-implantation DNA analysis on a cell that had been withdrawn from an embryo, and then they were using NIH equipment, single-cell analysis equipment, to analyze the cell that had been withdrawn from the embryo. And that letter at page 283 of the Joint Appendix says, from NIH to Georgetown, says, you cannot do this. You cannot do this because it's embryo-related research and it's prohibited by Dickey Wicker. And what was being done there was, quote, analysis from DNA derived from a human embryo, not on a human embryo itself, but on something derived from a human embryo, which is exactly what embryonic stem cell research is. As noted, we also have a second statutory argument, which we think equally invalidates the guidelines and, of course, would not invalidate the Bush policy because the Bush policy was intentionally made to be consistent with the concern about not incentivizing the destruction of human embryos. The guidelines self-consciously, explicitly anticipate that embryos will be destroyed in the future for the purposes of research to get federal funding. They have an entire section talking about how to go about doing that. There's no possible doubt about the question that the availability of hundreds of millions of dollars of additional research money creates more than a minimal risk.
Remind me of your response to the government's, your reply to the government's response that we should read a particularity requirement into your analysis into the risk prong. That it's not talking about posing a generalized risk to embryos, but it's only talking about risk to a particular embryo at a particular time.
Well, that's just not what the statute says. They say the statute says the only kind of research that can create this risk is research that is actually involving and looking at an embryo as the subject of the research. But the statute doesn't say that. It doesn't say research involving an actual embryo. It says research in which embryos are placed at more than minimal risk. And there's no question that federally funded research on embryonic stem cells, which require the destruction of embryos, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, creates a more than minimal risk that an embryo is going to be destroyed for the purpose of getting that federal funding. And that's
all
that
means. But is it going to be destroyed in that research? It says in which, not for which, not years before and for which, but in which.
Yes.
How is this research?
Because the fact that this is federally funded research creates an incentive.
You're back to, so it's just the incentive argument again.
Well, yes, but the statute doesn't say the embryo must be destroyed or placed at risk as part of this. It says that, it doesn't say this, the embryo must be actually the subject of the research. It says the research must place the embryo at risk. The federally funded research must place an embryo at risk. Clearly, this federally funded research.
Well, it says in which a human embryo or embryos are destroyed, et cetera.
Right? Yes.
And so it seems to me this is all one argument. The research is a continuum. It started with the destruction or involved the destruction of the embryo and continues on forever thereafter. And that the reason for reading it that way is the incentive.
Well, we think it's clearly two distinct arguments. One has to do with what research means, and the government agrees that derivation is research. The derivation here must be for the purpose of further research, of continuing that research, and therefore it's all part and parcel of research in which embryos are destroyed. But the second argument is...
Wait a minute. The government didn't agree to the last part of that. They agreed that there's research in the derivation and there's research in the funded activity.
Yes.
They're maintaining their separate research.
Yes. I'm sorry. There should be a semicolon between those two points. But what follows, we think, naturally from that concession is what I just said. But separate and apart
there's research into making laboratory equipment, and then there's research using laboratory equipment. There's no reason to think they're the same research.
No, but the subject
of different technologies at different times by different parties.
But we're not talking about research equipment. We're talking about the subject of the research. The embryonic stem cell research is on the embryonic stem cells that are derived from destruction of the embryo. It's not like a microscope.
But we're asking whether this is the same research or different research.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's research that involves the same input. Or the output of the one is an input to the other. But the purpose of the research, the undertaking is a different one, that's all.
Yes, and of course, under the guidelines, it can be the same person who does the derivation and the continuing analysis and research, and it can be payment. The federal money can be used to pay for, paid to the deriver for the purpose of using the stem cell.
What do you make of the fact that it says, this is pretty straightforward, it says research in which a human embryo or embryos are destroyed, not were destroyed.
Yes, but again, if it's the same research, which we believe it is, if it's just a continuation of the...
So it all comes back to being the same research. That's the only argument.
No, Your Honor. I think we're just talking about the first prong here. The second prong is entirely distinct from this point. Even if you completely disagree with everything I've said about the first prong, the second prong argument stands entirely independently, because the question there, regardless of whether there's a continuing research that entails the destruction, which is research for the purpose of the subsequent investigative activities, even if you don't agree with that and with the point that the regulation says research development is part of research, there's still the entirely separate argument that says, on a going forward basis, by promulgating the guidelines, by federally funding this research to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, the very fact that this research is ongoing today, federally funded, absolutely creates more than a minimal risk that an embryo is going to be destroyed for the purpose of getting federal funding. And that's all that's required to violate the second prong of the statute. And what's more, Congress made very clear that even if it's true that...
Excuse me, I don't understand how that is different, why that doesn't depend upon it being the same research. Or do you agree with that?
Let's assume, for the sake of argument, obviously we don't agree with this, but let's assume for the sake of argument that you're allowed to divide up research into separate chunks, as the government argues, okay? Nonetheless, so forget about the derivation that occurred that permitted the ongoing research right now. On a forward-looking basis, mm-hmm. other researchers, or indeed the same researcher who's conducting the research that is now being federally funded, by virtue of that fact, by virtue of the fact that there's federal funding available for this research, there is now an incentive for the destruction of additional stem cell lines going forward. And the NIH guidelines specifically focus on the future destruction of embryos. They have an entire section in the guidelines about how to go about destroying embryos in the future after promulgation of the guidelines for the purpose of getting funding. And in fact, they said at page 44, I think, of the guidellines. Yes, sorry, page 44 of the Joint Appendix, that the purpose of the guidelines is ensuring that the greatest number of human embryonic stem cells are available for federal funding. So they knew they're trying to incentivize more and more embryonic stem cell lines in order to provide more and more federal funding. That is absolutely creating a more than minimal risk that embryos are going to be destroyed. That statement about ensuring the greatest number is at page 44 of the Joint Appendix in the left-hand column, a little bit more than halfway down. after the italicized passage there. It's in the second sentence. To this end, the NIH is establishing a set of conditions that will maximize ethical oversight while ensuring that the greatest number of ethically derived HESCs are eligible for federal funding. So there's no question that they are trying to and are incentivizing the destruction of human embryos in violation of the guidelines. In addition, separate and apart from our Dickey Wicker argument, we have our APA arguments, which are separately sufficient to require invalidation of the guidelines.
Let me ask you about subsection 1 of Dickey Wicker. Do we know why the language was not the creation or destruction of a human embryo? I mean, is it because the drafters thought that would be swept in by 2? I mean, it would be very clear if they'd said prohibited the use of federal funds for the creation or destruction of a human embryo. And they didn't say that in subsection 1. I just wondered, do we know?
I'm not aware of any legislative history that reveals why they didn't say that, but certainly the fact that they didn't do that, if they had done that, then the government would win on the statutory argument, because it would do what the government says subsection 2, paragraph 2 does. But in fact, the fact that they used a different language and a different structure, we normally assume when Congress does that, that it intends a different result. So it's not permissible to construe paragraph 2 to do nothing more than it would have done if it had said what paragraph 1 says with respect to destruction.
Mr. Hunger, if I understood you correctly, you just said even if the court disagreed on the amendment that the APA alone would support, affirming the entry of the preliminary injunction. District court didn't reach this.
Correct.
And if we thought there was a violation of the Administrative Procedures Act, why would it follow that the Court of Appeals should affirm the entry of the preliminary injunction, essentially entering its own, rather than reverting to the district court to exercise its discretion in balancing the four factors?
Well, so we're entitled to defend the judgment on any grounds supported by the record. This was argued below.
Any legal ground, but there's a discretionary ground here as well, or element. Well, the discretionary element.
I think it would be within this court's discretion to do what we're urging, because the district court has already balanced the factors. If this court concludes, as we think it should,
it balanced it on the premise that the statute was clear on its face in your favor.
Yes.
If that's not so, and it has to decide whether there was a violation of the, or we decide there was a violation of the APA, there's a remedial discretion that comes with that judgment. And as you know, sometimes we leave, find something in violation of the APA, but don't vacate it because it can be, we think, readily corrected, or because disruption of the agency's program would be severe and the showing isn't conclusive. So those are all matters of judgment ordinarily exercised in the district court in a PI context.
Yes, Your Honor. I think, and certainly it would be within this court's discretion to remand, we think the APA violation is so clear and so egregious that it would be also appropriate for this court to proceed to decide that and conclude, given that the district court has already balanced the other factors and reached the conclusion that it reached, that this court would affirm the PI on that ground, but obviously the court has discretion to remand as well.
Do we know the status of the proceeding in the district court in terms of reaching the ultimate conclusion here? We're hearing this on preliminary injunction. Do we have some sense that something's going on down there that might reach a permanent injunction?
The summary judgment motions and motion and cross motion are fully briefed and awaiting decision, and that's the status as of the present time. I think the briefing on those concluded at the end of October. So there has been no decision on the summary judgment motions as of yet.
Do you see, is it possible that we could agree with you on, if we agreed with you on the statute, on the meaning of the statute, but thought the balancing of the hardships were different, that we could come out in a different place?
I don't think so. I mean, we don't think that the other factors could be balanced in a way that would lead to any conclusion other than that the PI should be affirmed. I mean, this court.
But let's imagine a situation where we agreed with you on the language of the statute, but thought that the harm to the government at the preliminary injunction stage was much greater than would be the harm to your clients. How does the court go about balancing those concerns?
Well, we don't think that the harm, we don't think that the record supports that.
I understand.
But if you assume that that's the case, right, then still, because of the strength of our showing on the merits and because of the public interest in having a funding statute enforced, I mean, every minute that goes on that NIH pours more money into what we submit as illegal activity, illegal for federal money
to be poured. I'm giving you a hypothetical situation where we would agree with you on the statute but disagree with you on the balance of the hardships. The balance of the hardships, if we thought went against you to a great degree, but we thought that you had a substantial likelihood of success on the merits, how would we think about a case like that? How should we?
Well, I mean, ultimately, obviously, it's up to the court and its discretion, or the district court and its discretion, first and foremost, to balance those factors. I suppose there can be cases in which all of the other factors point so strongly in one direction that a showing of success on the merits, of likely success on the merits by itself, is insufficient. This is not such a case. There's no question that my clients are suffering ongoing injury. This court has already so held in the prior decision. And with respect to the balancing of the
wait 1 second. We held that there was sufficient, that there was injury for Article III purposes, not that it was injury sufficient to support the preliminary injunction, or even that it was irreparable.
True, but there's no dispute that it's irreparable, Your Honor. The government hasn't suggested that there's some way that my client's injuries could be remedied. It's not a case of...
It suggests instead that it's speculative.
But if it were speculative, then this court's prior decision would be wrong, and clearly that's not correct.
No, because the competitive injury component of our standing analysis allows for some greater uncertainty than does the speculative limitation in the in irreparable harm analysis.
Well, but I think
competitive injury is not having the opportunity to compete, or diminished opportunity to compete.
It's being in this case.
But here the injury is that the injury? I thought the injury here is that's irreparable, because that would be reparable if that's all it is.
It's not reparable because my clients are being forced. I mean, Dr. Shirley has had multiple grant applications filed and some already rejected in illegal competition with embryonic stem cell research applications. And so he's already suffering, and he's continuing suffering every time he has to file a new grant application in an effort to get NIH funding. He's continuing to suffer that competitive injury.
Can't that be met in a damages remedy somehow?
I'm not aware of any damages remedy against the government in these circumstances.
Well, no, he could resubmit his applications. Right. And his applications could be funded once they become the priority because the competition's been eliminated.
But he's already had to go through the effort and expense of preparing the first rounds of these applications against this illegal competition, and that there would be no way to recompense that loss and whatever funding he might have been able to obtain.
Well, why not just go back and grant it to him if you eventually prevail?
Yeah. Well, but there's no way to rerun a competition that's been done at some point in the past by particular. You'd have to reassemble the panel, somehow redo the entire consideration of all the competing grant applications. As a practical matter, it's just not possible to do that, and the government hasn't suggested that it is. The government hasn't pointed to any way in which these injuries are reparable, and we don't think any exists. And with respect to the balance...
That would be exactly the kind of thing that the district court would explore and didn't explore here because it resolved the matter on the other legal argument, and for your favor on the other legal argument.
No, Your Honor, the government did find, the district court did find irreparable injury and did reject the government's arguments. The government obviously is trying to flesh out its arguments on appeal, but the government, the district court expressly considered each of the four factors, including irreparable injury and balance of the harms and the public interest in its decision, and ruled in our favor.
I understand that, but the irreparable injury was from pursuing a program that was not, in his view, authorized.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if the irreparable injury is instead that there wasn't an adequate explanation given for some feature of the agency's decision, that might readily change the balance.
I see.
It could also affect your probability of success on the merits if the APA is the issue.
If we're only talking about the APA, then as we discussed before, certainly the court would have discretion to remand for further consideration.
Further questions?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. We try to limit this to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have 4 points. I think I can do them quite quickly. I just wanted to clarify about the research that is being done with human embryonic stem cells. It's actually not just research on the same stem cells that are derived and divided after the derivation. What happens is scientists differentiate the cells, not derivation, differentiate the cells. That's what's so unique about these human embryonic stem cells. They're pluripotent. So they can be differentiated into nerve cells, liver cells, heart cells. And this research is on those differentiated cells. That's the vast majority where they're then trying to figure out drug resistance for those types of cells, for some kind of drug that could treat some liver ailment, or for some kind of transplantation. And so that's a very different kind of research. On this incentive argument that plaintiffs make, factually, they present no evidence for this. And if you look right now, there are 82 lines that have been approved under the current guidelines. 80 of those lines were developed before these guidelines. There is a private market for human embryonic stem cell research. There is private funding of derivation. Those, only two of these lines were even had embryos that were donated after the guidelines. So if anything, this preliminary injunction is much, much, much too broad to support any kind of incentive. The district court didn't rely on that, and in fact, I think the district court's standing rulings for some of the other parties are contrary to any kind of incentive theory. The third point I wanted to make, Your Honor, was in response to your question, Judge Henderson, about the statutory text and structure. The structure of that, the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, I think can be explained by what it was responding to in 1996. There was proposed federal funding of research on embryos that had to do with pre-implantation work and in improving IVF. That was what the original intent of this was to prohibit. So the first provision says you can't fund creation of embryos for IVF. And second, then you can't do research on them in which they are going to be subject to risk of injury or destruction. So I think that explains the structure. The last point I would make, Your Honor, is the interpretation here, as we've discussed, would upset a decade of the status quo. And I would say not just two, but three administrations, Your Honor. In 2000, the Clinton administration had also developed guidelines, and those were what was put on hold when President Bush then, as a policy matter, made a different line drawing. And there have been five Congresses over this period that have been well aware of NIH's funding of this very critical research that has obviously enormous potential. So we submit, in light of that, the interpretation of NIH's of the statute must be upheld, and that the district court's ruling that this statute somehow unambiguously prohibits this federal funding should be reversed.
I have one question, and that is, we couldn't find an executive order that implemented the Bush policy. There isn't one, is there?
There isn't, but there was a second executive order. It's at the back of the red brief, plaintiff's brief. It's on page A11. In 2007, the Bush administration supplemented that policy by saying we also want to fund alternative sources of pluripotent stem cells, as all administrations have supported research on all types of stem cells. And on page A13, at the very end of that executive order in subsection C, it specifically says nothing in this forbids the use of existing stem cell lines deemed eligible for other federally funded research in accordance with the presidential policy decision of August 9th for research specifically authorized by this order. And that was the Crawford Texas statement by President Bush. That's correct, Your Honor. But again, that is consistent with NIH's and ongoing interpretation. Thank you, Your
Honor. Thank you, Ms. Brinkman. Case is submitted.